The Way of the Wise Art, Level 2, The Christ Mysteries, Module 2, The Birth of Christ. The colour for this module is an indigo blue blending into a light red. Welcome back to the Way of the Wise Art. In this module, we return to the theme of two. This is summarized in the first two lines of the verse. Two, not one, are the forces which feed us. One, not two, is the soul that will need us. The intertwining of the two forces around the one is dramatically depicted in the central picture. The two forces are the red and blue snakes. The one is the central vessel. The central vessel can be thought of as the soul, and the individuality is represented by the crown, Ketha, above the vessel, which of course symbolizes the divine consciousness. Before we commence to investigate the mysteries of the two, we should briefly recapitulate the contents of Module 1. Here we discovered that originally we existed in a state of what we might call God consciousness. We lived in this state, which the Bible calls Eden, or Paradise, until another entity entered in. The book of Genesis calls this entity simply a serpent. Later, a second entity entered into our consciousness, which the book of Revelation also describes as a serpent, or a dragon. These are the two forces which are depicted as serpents in our central picture. In Module 1 we discussed some of the ways these forces acted upon us. Perhaps their greatest gift is free will. Until these forces became part of our consciousness, we had no will other than that of the gods. You might say that we were like puppets on strings. When the higher beings pulled a string, we responded like a marionette, that is, without thinking. The two beings whom we named Lucifer and Ahriman severed these strings, and gradually we began to have thoughts which originated from within us, instead of experiencing the thinking of higher beings outside us. This process took many, many thousands of years. Theology sometimes calls it the fall, but it was more like a gradual sinking out of the consciousness of the divine into a separate human consciousness. Had this process continued, then eventually we would have become completely separate, selfish beings, unable to feel or express compassion or concern for others, but only concerned with our own egotistical needs. The fall is, in fact, a falling out of love. In Module 1, we discovered that in order to reverse this process, love itself had to fall into our sphere of human consciousness. This entering of love into human consciousness is the Christ event. If we have been brought up in a religious environment, we may become puzzled at this point. Why? We might ask, couldn't God who is supposed to be all-powerful, simply restore us with a simple act of will? If we ponder this more deeply, however, we see that if the higher spiritual worlds did come in and override our consciousness, then they are negating our own free will. Our spiritual identity would have been denied. Jazz musicians have a saying, if you make a mistake, play it again. This means that the notes which you played as a mistake can be woven back into the tapestry of the music and given a new meaning by the context and development of the composition. The new creation often is more complex and meaningful than the first. The gods did not want to take away our mistake. They wanted to weave it back into the composition of the creation. Just as in a jazz band, the other musicians might have to take on the original mistake, so the gods had to take on our human mistake. And the only way that this could happen was for one God, the being we know as Christ, to take on our human condition. If you look for a moment at the graphic in the top left-hand corner of the page, you will see a white pillar and a black pillar. These represent choice. It is only when we are allowed to choose that free will enters into the equation. The two pillars then represent the freedom that we have to make a choice. This choice is depicted in the tarot card placed in the bottom right-hand corner of the page. This time, the black pillar is on the left, the white pillar is on the right. Sitting in front of the two pillars is the soul, which is feminine. In fact, the image depicts the soul before incarnation. Like the woman in the Book of Revelation, she has the moon under her feet, representing the astral body. Behind her, the veil shows part of the tree of life, representing the etheric body, which the soul will have to take on in incarnation. The soul holds a scroll, which contains the word taro, T-A-R-O, which is an anagram for R-O-T-A, rota, Latin for wheel. When the soul moves beyond the veil and descends onto the wheel of physical incarnation, she moves into the world of choice. The scroll she carries is something called the sacred contract, because it contains the decisions and agreements the soul made about the coming incarnation. While in incarnation, the soul meets the people and situations described in the contract. The choices she makes in these encounters will be placed before her again after she leaves incarnation. The number two then represents the descent into physical incarnation. At this point, we want to consider the act of Christ coming into physical incarnation. As we have seen from the tarot trump, the High Priestess, the soul will adopt what the ancient philosophers called garments, the astral body and the etheric body. When we incarnate, the soul is able to assemble these from the elements of the astral and the etheric bodies left from her previous incarnation. The Christ, however, has never incarnated before. So how does he find these soul garments? In fact, the Christ is not even a soul. The Christ is pure individuality, which is what our souls will become eventually. Carl Jung once wrote a book entitled Modern Man, In Search of a Soul. Man, however, always has a personal soul. On the other hand, Christ had indeed to search for a soul. Not just a soul, Christ also needed an astral body and an etheric body. As we investigate the complexity of the incarnation of Christ, we can only marvel at the new order and beauty created by the higher spiritual powers out of the tangled threads and mistakes of human history. When I wrote these words, we were still in the season of Christmas. Every year, at this time, I remember an old song, Love Came Down at Christmas. Christmas is celebrated worldwide as the birth of Jesus, but the date of December the 25th was not adopted until about the 4th century. Historians have sought to estimate a probable date of birth from the Gospel, but here we run into contradictions and paradoxes. To begin with, of the four Gospels, neither Mark nor John record anything of the birth of Jesus. If we turn to the two that do contain birth stories, then we discover that they are quite different. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is born in Bethlehem and is visited by the Magi, the traditional three wise men. In the Gospel of Luke, Jesus is also born in Bethlehem because his parents have to travel there for a census. He is born in an inn and attended by angels and shepherds. Then are the genealogies given. Matthew gives 42 generations of ancestry from Joseph, taking us back to David. Luke goes a bit further, starting again with Joseph. 77 generations trace the ancestry of Jesus firstly again to David, and then right back to Adam. Luke, however, traces Jesus' line back to David through Nathan, while Matthew has the line of descent to David running through Solomon. So we can talk of a Nathan Jesus and a Solomon Jesus. And because Nathan was a priest and Solomon a king, we could talk of a priestly Jesus and a kingly Jesus. But this is confusing enough. But when we consider that Luke stresses that the mother of Jesus was a virgin, and both Gospels state emphatically that Joseph had no sex with Mary before Jesus was born, then we could well wonder why the Gospels considered it important to trace the ancestry of Jesus through his father, with whom he presumably had no biological connection. Well, these matters puzzled generations of scholars and theologians. The general reasoning adopted is that both birth stories are mythical and created to display different theological elements. There is, however, one explanation which is very simple and covers all the discrepancies. There were two Jesuses. I will say that again. There were two Jesuses. Well, this explanation was first put forward by the great clairvoyant Rudolf Steiner and was confirmed by Reverend Mario Schoonmaker through his own investigations. Now, admittedly, if there were two children named Jesus, then they would both have to have had parents called Joseph and Mary. This may seem like quite a stretch of the imagination, but actually we know quite a lot of historical detail about the names of the Jewish population in the first century. By compiling lists from inscriptions and texts, experts have discovered that both Jesus and Joseph were very common names at the time. Of course, in the Aramaic of the time, they were pronounced Yeshua and Yosef. If you are interested, the most popular name of the time was Simon. The second most popular was Yosef, and Yeshua comes in at sixth. It also turns out that more than one in every five women bore the name Mary. So much for the statistics. But why, we might ask, do both Jesus' children come into the gospel records? The answer comes back to the soul and its garments. The entity we know as Christ had never experienced physical incarnation before. As human beings, we experience the physical world by virtue of the physical body, but also through the etheric body, the astral body, and the soul. Christ could not be given just any etheric or astral body. Remember that these two bodies contain within themselves the forces of Ahriman and Lucifer, respectively. The etheric and the astral bodies had to be as free as possible of such forces so that Christ would not have to contend with these powers. Over the course of thousands of years, certain souls had managed to work with their subtle bodies so as to purify them of their negative forces. The first of these bore the name Zoroaster or Zarathustra. According to Rudolf Steiner, there were several teachers of this name, the earliest being, which Plutarch agrees with, around about 6000 BC. This Zoroaster incarnated in Persia, modern Iran. He perceived the world as a conflict between two celestial beings, the first a being of light, emanating from the celestial spiritual worlds, he called Ahura Mazda, and later this became known as Ormazd. So the first entity he perceived is the being of light. We might say that Ahura Mazda or Ormazd is an expression of Christ. The second being he perceived was a being of darkness who originated from the earth consciousness, and he called this being Ahriman. The reason Zoroaster could perceive these two opposing powers is because he had purified his etheric body of the darkness of the Ahrimanic forces, creating a body of light. It took an enormous soul energy to accomplish this task. Zoroaster bequeathed this knowledge to those who followed him in the Persian religion. Even as late as the 4th century of our era, a young child would be asked the following questions. Who am I? And to whom do I belong? Whence have I come and whither am I returning? What is my lineage and what is my race? What is my proper calling in earthly existence? Did I come from the celestial world, or is it in the earthly world that I began to be? And here are the answers. I come from the celestial world. It is not in the terrestrial world that I began to be. I was originally manifested in the spiritual state. My original state is not the terrestrial state. I belong to Ormazd, not to Ahriman. The accomplishment of my vocation consists in this, to consider my true self as belonging to Ormazd and the archangels. When you and I die, unless we are initiates, first our etheric body dissolves. This normally takes about 3 days. In the weeks, months, or even years following our death, the astral body also dissolves. The soul is able to take from each of the etheric and the astral a small element. We might call it a seed element, which contains the instructions, so to speak, of how to assemble the etheric or astral when the soul later returns to incarnation. Now, this does not apply to an initiate like Zoroaster. The etheric body of such an individual is kept in spirit so that it may be given to other incarnating souls who have need of its particular qualities. The individual who was able to make use of the etheric body of Zoroaster was Christ. This etheric body was received by the Jesus of Matthew's Gospel, the Solomon Jesus. With the etheric also, the Solomon Jesus was guided by the soul of Zoroaster. Such a child would have been bright, inquisitive, and full of knowledge. The relationship of Zoroaster to the Solomon Jesus is indicated in Matthew by the visit of the Magi. The Magi were the priests of the Zoroastrian religion. They were able to follow the descent of the soul of their teacher Zoroaster from the spiritual worlds as a star, and they were guided by their perception of this star to the place where they met Jesus. As the Matthew Jesus, the kingly Jesus, grows older, the soul of Zoroaster is able to work upon his etheric and developing personality. This meant that Jesus would be filled with knowledge and intelligence as he grew older. This is the Jesus of the Gospel of Matthew. What of the Jesus of Luke's Gospel? We have already noticed that Luke makes a point of tracing the genealogy of Jesus back to Adam. There is a deep significance in this. As we have already understood from Module 1, the earliest human souls did not live in this world at all. It was not until the episode where Adam and Eve ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil that souls had to take on a physical body. You may also remember that the reason they were driven out of the Garden of Eden was so they should not eat of the tree of life. To eat of the tree of life means to absorb something of each of the 10 states of consciousness which comprise the tree. But then, the tree of life is also within us. So when we were deprived of the connection with the tree of life in the Garden of Eden, we left something of the original human essence behind. Let me rephrase this. As human beings, there is a part of us which has never descended into physical incarnation. It remained in the spiritual worlds, and it is this pure part of humanity which was given to the Luke Jesus. There were actually two aspects to this. The first was the etheric body, but along with the etheric body is the astral body. We might call this an astral sheath, for it covers the developing child until it is ready to expand into the astral body around the age of 12 and the next 7 years and create the completely formed astral body. This profound and difficult truth is behind the creation of the 77 generations leading to the birth of the Luke Jesus, tracing his connection to Adam, the primordial human soul. what sort of child would this Luke Jesus, the priestly Jesus, become? Unlike the Matthew Jesus, who was filled with the spirit of Zoroaster and would be very articulate and able to grasp concepts and ideas with ease, the Luke Jesus would appear retarded. Remember, there is no soul attached to this Jesus, but he has a very pure astral sheath and etheric body. Such a being would have little, if any, mental development, but they would exude love, compassion, and peace. At the birth of this Jesus, the angels themselves celebrate the innocence and purity of this being with their singing. As Reverend Mario described him, the Luke Jesus could not do woodwork nor arithmetic, for within his subconscious there was a blank. He had no memory of any of these activities. With all due respect, he was stupid and lacked the capacity to learn. If you have read the Gospel of St. Luke, however, you may protest at this description, because in chapter 2, Luke tells us how Jesus is found by his parents sitting in the temple amongst all the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. As Luke put it, all who heard him were amazed at his understandings and his answers. This does not sound like a child who is unable to learn or articulate. The solution to this riddle lies in the last two lines of the verse. When the two that were two once become wed as one, then the whole tree of man will shine forth like the sun. An amazing event happened at the age of 12. This is the age at which Jesus was taken to the temple. At this point, spiritual vision tells us that the individuality of Zarathustra left the Matthew Jesus, who eventually died as a result, and transferred himself to the Luke Jesus. This Jesus now is the summation of both lines. He becomes both priest and king. All of a sudden, the Luke Jesus, who up till then could hardly say a word, became filled with the spirit of one of the most evolved human souls who ever existed. No wonder he was suddenly able to debate with the wise men of the temple. No wonder, too, that his parents were so shocked. Who was this child? He looked like their Jesus. He was just very different. I suspect that Mary, his mother, knew something of what had occurred. The visit of the angel Gabriel to her shows that she was extremely clairvoyant, and when the Gospel says his mother kept all these things in her heart, it probably means that she had insights into this child which she could not share with anyone else. You may be asking, why did things have to be so complicated? The reason is that Christ needed two important features from this human instrument. The first necessity was that the astral and the etheric be totally free of any negative spiritual influence. This condition was met with the kernel of the etheric and the astral, which had been kept in the spiritual world since before human incarnation into the physical body. On the other hand, Christ would need to be able to give out the highest spiritual teachings, and the individuality of Zoroaster with his intelligence and insight prepared the body for this purpose. The two children who became one, fulfill the need of a vehicle of perfect purity with the wisdom to teach. From the age of 12 to 30, Zoroaster was able to inform and shape the purity of the astral and etheric. We come now to the incarnation of the Christ being. Christ is indeed the wizard of the poem. He had to live life in the world as of old. In this old world, spirituality was viewed as an ascent to the spiritual worlds. That is why the old world works from the feet to the head. Christ, however, is going to work from the head to the feet. In order to see Christ beginning to flow the light from the head to the feet, we move forward in the life of Jesus to the age of 30. At this stage, it may be worth recapping from level 1 what we know of our own development as spiritual beings. Firstly, we are born with a physical body. Second, from the age of 7 to the age of 14, the etheric body develops. Third, from the age of 14 to about the age of 21, the astral body develops. Four, from the age of 21 to 28, the soul helps the mind and thinking develop to maturity within the astral. And five, at about the age of 30, the soul, which contains our individuality, now takes up the reins. What happens to Jesus at the age of 30? It is something so significant that while only two gospel writers thought to chronicle the birth of Jesus, every single gospel records his baptism. If you look for a moment at the picture at the bottom left-hand corner of the book, you will see a depiction of a person buried in a tomb embraced by a winged snake. This represents the state of the human being who has been overcome by the luciferic and Ahrimanic forces. The tomb represents the domain of Ahriman, the earth. The wings on the snake represent the realm of Lucifer, the air. Had the Christ not incarnated, we would have become totally separated from the spiritual worlds and become either part of the earth consciousness, totally material, or part of the air consciousness, totally intellectual. John the Baptist came into incarnation with a specific task. St. Mark says it is to prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths straight. The way of the Lord is the central channel in the etheric body. It is the vessel in the central picture. To make it straight means first to cleanse the etheric of the negative spiritual forces, even if just for a moment, and then open the central channel. John baptized people by forcing them under water and then releasing them, pushing the person's head under the cold water of the Jordan River, shocks the astral, lifting it further away from the body. This releases and expands the etheric body, which temporarily restores our spiritual vision. Something similar happens at death. The astral lifts from the body and the etheric expands beyond the confines of the physical and releases an image of our whole life stretching back as a reverse panorama. When John baptizes Jesus, something quite remarkable happens. The stimulus, the freezing water, loosens the astral and the etheric. This means that the soul of Zoroaster now can free itself of its relationship with this body. As it does this, the Spirit of Christ descends from the heights of the Godhead itself and takes over the instrument which has been so carefully prepared. John sees this as it happens and tells us, I saw the Spirit descend as a dove from heaven, and it abided on him. The Spirit which John saw as a dove is the Christ. Christ, despite our Christmas carols, is not in fact born in Bethlehem. Christ is born at the baptism. John indicates that Christ is firstly above the head of Jesus. Christ takes the place of the soul. It would take 3 years, however, for the Christ, in the position of the soul, to completely penetrate the bodies of Jesus. Our verse describes it this way. When the light may flow down from the head to the feet, then the old and the new will fuse when they meet. The image at the top right hand of the picture page shows a being whose head is lit up like a sun. This indicates the person who has entered so deeply into the Christ mysteries that their thinking has become permeated by Christ. Such a person becomes clairvoyant so that they can now cooperate with the Christ forces in their own future evolution. The artist has shown this in having the figure in the image look at the caduceus. The caduceus, the winged staff, in its turn represents the etheric and astral bodies. As we advance further into the Christ mysteries, we begin to transform these bodies. We become winged so that we can rise into the higher spiritual worlds. The figure in the picture stands upon a globe representing the earth. Eventually, the process of transformation will embrace all our bodies, including and especially the physical. When this happens, we shall no longer experience a separation from Christ. Rather, we shall have united with his power and transformed our entire being. It is only then that we shall be able to say, the whole tree of man will shine forth like the sun. As the music returns, first imagine the colour of clear indigo blue emanating from your heart. Imagine that it flows out to and is surrounded by the light peach blossom red of the Garden of Eden. From a distance high above, the shining dove descends from the lights in the sky through the reds until it rests above your head. Now feel it descend inside your head, your brain, your mind has become radiant like the sun. Everything looks different, fresh, and new. Slowly allow this light to fill your whole body, from the head to the feet. Become the radiant, expressive, spiritual being you most truly are. Sit like this quietly for a few minutes, being your real self, being Christ. So shall it be.